Welcome back to One Mom to Another. My name is Cindy Anderson, author of the book One Mom to Another. Be kind to yourself, embrace the good, and find joy in the everyday. I am really excited to have my daughter, Stephanie, with me today. For this episode, we're going to talk about a subject that maybe you don't expect to hear in a podcast about mothering. We're going to discuss the time comes that we become the parents and our parents become the child. The reason why I have this in mind to do an episode about this is I raised all my children, became an empty nester. And then within a few years after that, my mother's health started to decline and I needed to step in and be her caretaker. My mother recently passed away and I wanted to use this experience of the last couple of years to discuss the process of being our parents' caretaker, starting from some of the beginning stages to how to close up their life after they die.
I think this is such a helpful topic because they don't write books about this, right?
Right.
In your whole adult life, you know, what to expect when you're pregnant or expecting or the toddler years, but then you get to, mm-hmm. you know, aging parents and the information train just comes to a screeching halt.
Yeah. And I think that even though we always think our parents are old, right? I mean,
I don't know if I should answer that question.
Go ahead.
We think of you as much older than we currently are.
Yeah. Yes. I remember I was 37 and I asked my mom something about when did this happen? And she said, I was 37. And I said, oh my goodness, I thought you were so old. And so we do always think our parents are old, but we don't ever really think of them dying. And we just don't ever really entertain the thought of what happens when my parent becomes the child and how am right. I going to deal with that?
Right, right.
Our parents take care of us and then they take care of themselves. And all of a sudden we realize, oh, wait a minute. They're not as self-sufficient as we thought they were. And it comes as a bit of a shock. I would take my mom to the doctor's appointment, which is how often this first begins as we start taking over the responsibilities of caretaking. And I would say, do you want me to come in? She'd say no. And so I just respected that. And I should have had a better discussion with her than had I done that. I think some of these other stages would have gone a little bit better. So what I've marked as the second stage, and sometimes not that this doesn't always happen, because sometimes our parents do live in their home until they die. And then we're hit with this all at one time. But at some point and in some way, we are all going to have to go through our parents' things, whether to help them downsize or after they die, disperse their belongings. The way this happened for me, my mother was having a hard time taking care of her home. And one day she said, I want to sell my home and live in an apartment. And I said, okay, that sounds great. And then she said, the process overwhelms me. I don't think I can do it. And so I said, okay, I will get you moved, downsized. So you flew out.
Yeah, you had me, you had Jamie, my sister-in-law that lives local, all the men that are connected to you.
I think Caroline came down, Caroline came, your daughter came. And I had spent a few weeks before we came going through her things and everything was labeled. We had post-it notes over everything. And I would just like to say too, as we talk about downsizing, this was a three-step process with my mother. So first, she was going to move into an apartment, and that's where we were going. Mm-hmm. And then my husband got a job in a different state, and we realized we were moving. So the apartment became temporary. We moved to a new state, found a home. She was going to live independently there, maybe build a cottage on our property. That did not work out. So what ended up happening is that she then lived in a suite attached to our house, two rooms with a little kitchenette. So that was downsizing to the apartment and then from the apartment into her suite. Mm-hmm. And once we got her into a suite, there was still too much stuff and we had to downsize after that. So all of our discussions are going to be around those events.
Stage of the downsizing.
Yeah.
And we approached it very logically. You made every effort to let grandma choose what stayed and what to get donated or sold. Mm-hmm. But I don't think any of us really knew to expect the emotional issues that grandma would be facing going through stuff.
Right. You know, their things have stories.
Yeah.
Souvenirs from trips that they went to. As they're getting older and they're getting more confined, they're going to get more sentimental about those things. And it's not that they still
need them or will ever use them again. It's just the thought that what they did is going to end up in the trash. Just is a little bit too much for them to do it.
Process.
Thank you. I knew there was a word. Speaking of getting older.
It's fine.
Yeah. And I think it's important to also remember too, that especially in the case of a parent who is not only getting older, but their health is failing, being able to have their stuff is a sense of control, which I didn't realize going into helping you with this process beforehand, because where I look at a bookcase full of books and just think, well, they just need to get packed up. She wanted to have more input about how the books got backed up and in which boxes they got put in. She was just very particular. And I remember just being very confused by this until I realized, like, oh, this is must be a loss of control for her that she's not used to having, which I think is also a crucial key to understand. We thought we were being slow and methodical. To her, we were moving at lightning speed, but we did need to move through it.
We had a time crunch, and you had taken a lot of time before the actual push to go through the whole house with her.
Yeah.
But when actual packing time came,
It
was a different ball game. You know, you go through all the items and they've had their chance to say something.
Right.
Maybe one approach is to have them gone for the day or for the week that you're packing up, and just saying, we will respect all the wishes, all the agreements and things that you've asked us to do. But if you can't, we don't want you.
Yeah. It was like the never ending downsizing project.
Yeah.
I think the hardest day was I was in the addition. She had 2 file cabinets full of music, and I had been telling her, Mom, we still need to downsize. So I said to her, can we go through your music since you're not teaching piano anymore? And she just sat in this chair and cradled her music in her arms and started to cry. And I thought, man,
this is not something that can be handled by spreadsheets and
no. There are real emotions. The other thing that happened is we took her car away, and that was hard on her too.
Yeah,
she lost her independence. That was just really an emotional whirlwind. The takeaway from with your parents, helping them downsize, if I could do it over again, I would sit down and have that discussion with my mom. This is going to be emotional for you. It's going to be hard. What can we do to get through this process? How can we make it easier? So I would have that conversation with my mother. And then the next thing I want to talk about is what happens when your parent comes to live with you.
Right.
There are a number of really important things that I wish that I would have done. And the first one is to establish expectations.
My mother and I had completely different expectations. And once she got into my home, she couldn't hide the dementia anymore.
Right.
The amount of help that we thought she was going to need really was realistic.
Yeah.
And she really needed to have been put into an assisted living facility at that time. But we were in COVID. There was nothing to do. But I think the first thing really to understand is this different expectations, And I don't know why I didn't have this conversation with her. I think I was just so stressed out over everything else that was going on that I didn't think of it.
And no matter how good your relationship is between mother and daughter, it's major life changes. It's major life changes for the aging mother who is losing freedoms and independence and having to move into her daughter's home. And then it's a huge life change for the daughter.
Yeah. And I think I underestimated how huge that life change was. I mean, we have a 1-story house and it's kind of long, and we have our rooms at one end of the house and her 2 rooms were clear at the other end of the house. And she had her own entry in and out of her home. And so I just expected her to go to church and make friends and come and go like an adult does, a great mother.
Yeah, she has hobbies. She likes to do things.
Yeah, she's an extrovert. She wants to go out to the senior center. She does silver sneakers. She plays the piano. She was going to make friends, and I was going to live very independently of her.
And because even though she had been kind of careful not to, reveal the true extent of how she was doing, or she didn't maybe even fully understand how poorly she was doing.
Right. You needed a lot of help.
And she didn't communicate that and just, I think, assume that you would just be ready and available to give the help.
Right. I don't know, but it was very soon into it that we realized she really couldn't make herself any food. She couldn't put a sandwich together. She just would go without food. And then she'd come into our kitchen and ask what was for dinner. And so we started having dinner with her every night, which is fine. But it took us a while to get there, to figure out.
Yeah, you were going in with one game plan and realized that you were playing a completely different ball game.
So that was the first thing. That was the first surprise, was just how much help she needed. And the second thing that hit me was what it took to have another person live with you like that.
Right.
You know, she fell probably the third night we were in our home. So now we have to worry about her falls. And we very quickly realized we could no longer go anyplace without her.
Yeah.
I would leave for a couple hours to go do errands, but it made me nervous. I mean, COVID shrunk our life, certainly, but our life shrunk even more.
Yeah.
With the inability to, we couldn't go visit kids. We couldn't go away for the weekend.
Yeah.
We couldn't even have a long day on Saturday. We had to go do what we needed to do and get back pretty quickly.
Right.
You know, I think that's something we don't think about. We think, oh, I'm going to take care of my mother. And
that sounds caring and it sounds nurturing. It sounds like all the things you would want to do.
We take care of our parents. They took care of me. I'm going to take care of them.
Right.
But I think we have to really be realistic with how that is going to be emotionally.
Right.
And I think also I didn't realize I needed to set boundaries. And that kind of came too late in the game too, because by the time I was wanting to set boundaries, she had deteriorated even more.
Right.
Physically and mentally, and boundaries were just kind of like, you know.
So what conversations do you wish that you would have had with your mom, you know, prior to her living with you?
I would have sat down and said, what are your expectations? What do you think living with me is going to look like?
Yeah.
And what do I think living with you is going to look like? And then I would have talked about, what do we anticipate? Meaning, at what point is living in my home no longer safe or healthy for either one of us, mentally and physically, because we very quickly were in over our heads. We didn't want to put her in a nursing home or a assisted living during COVID and then not be able to go visit her, because isolation was a real thing.
Just like all of us during the pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah, watching TV, and her ability to read was leaving. So she wasn't able to enjoy her books like she did. She wasn't able to play the piano like she did. And I just couldn't imagine then further isolating her
in a
rest home. So we got some in-home help, and that did help quite a bit.
You were able to actually then leave to go do errands, and you could actually go
anything during the day. Yeah. But I also think the hardest thing is you watch your own DNA. You're like, is this going to be me?
Mm-hmm.
In 20 years, is this me? You know, am I going to have dementia? You know, my mother also had a pretty serious heart issues. Her legs became too weak to hold her. One day she came out and she said, I forgot how to cough. I don't know how to cough. And she was very upset over that. And so you can't help but internalize it and just think,
right,
what is my old age going to look like?
So what do you think is a good age range to start having these conversations with your children?
Well, the earlier the better. You know, you and I, all my other kids, I've had conversation over what is going to happen. And I told you, I don't know if you remember this conversation, but I told this to Eric too. I just said, if I lose it, I just want to hold your hand all day and follow you around. That's all I want to do. I know I would be safe. I would be so scared. But yet that's not realistic either. You know, this is a busy time of life. Your kids are getting married. Your kids are coming and going. I mean, you have your own grandkids. And it's so hard when you're the daughter.
Right.
And you just feel like, okay, mom, what do I need to do? What do I need to do?
Yeah.
And you, what do I need to do yourself out of your own life?
Right. And because if they come to live with you and if they are relatively healthy still, but maybe not quite fully independent, they're a caregiver for many years.
And well, we've hit this a few times, but you didn't understand until really March of 2020.
Right.
How bad things were. And so and then it happened very suddenly. So you didn't really have time to like adjust and acclimate to being her caretaker and to put things
plan in place.
Yeah. So you were always about five steps behind what your mom needed.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
And I'm sure for my mother too, but from the caretaker point of view, there is a lot of guilt because this is your mom. Right.
And a lot of conflicting feelings. You know, it was hard to have her here. And that's just the honest truth.
And I think, you know, it's interesting because you're not obviously not her parent, but we're talking about caregiving. With all types of caregiving, there's going to be guilt. There's the mom guilt we all feel with our own children. There's the caregiving guilt we're going to feel taking care of our elderly parents.
Right.
We're not going to escape the guilt.
No, you don't escape it. It was grieving that we no longer hold that role that we used to have. You know,
so what I did and what I would encourage anybody else to do is I
went to counseling to help me kind of deal with some of these emotions.
I think it's a really valid point that get a therapist, get a counselor to help during this transition period. They're trained to help you work through feelings. And
And I have wonderful support from all my kids, from their spouses, from my husband, but I needed a counselor. I needed somebody who didn't love me to look at the situation objectively. Help me understand that boundaries were an act of love.
Right.
And how to do that in a way that's not offensive. Those are all discussions that you need to have, because every conversation that she heard us in the kitchen, she would come out and want to join us.
Family time.
Right. And I thought, you know what? I could see myself doing that with one of my kids. Oh, they're in the kitchen. I'll go talk to them.
Right.
But we have to stop and think, maybe those two people need some alone time, because Rich and I have time.
And it's interesting, because if you, as husband and wife, and you need some time to talk, and you have one of your children coming in and trying to talk with you, we have zero problem saying to our children, hey, mom and dad are having a conversation right now.
Right.
We'll chat with you when we're done.
Yeah.
But we should be able to say that to our parents living with us and say, hey, we're having a conversation. We'd love to chat with you when we're done. Yeah. But because it is a parent that you're saying that to, we're still kind of stuck in the role of being their child.
Yes. We started to do that. We started to say, oh, mom, we're talking about something here for a minute. Can you excuse us?
Right.
It did not go over well. And I say that because sometimes it just doesn't, but it didn't make the boundary wrong. So to recap, I would have a really good idea medically where my parent was. What help are you going to need? What help can I give? What can I not give? And then this is, what are our expectations and what are our boundaries? And I think those are great conversations to have before. And then I would suggest making this switch from the daughter to the mother is hard and it doesn't feel right. And I think counseling can help.
The other thing is, where is your line regarding when it would be better for your parent to move into assisted living or a nursing home? And we all have different lines. Some people, the line is a lot farther than others. And there's no right or wrong. There's no reason for guilt, because no matter what you do, you're taking care of your parent. And this was very hard for me to finally accept that, because we ended up having to put her in a home.
Just to go back, when she was younger and I was younger, she would talk about her old age and she said, I'm just going to come live with you. I don't ever want to be put in a nursing home. And because I was naive, I would say to her, oh, mom, no, I'll take care of you. You can live with us. It'll be great.
Yeah.
And
grandma was in very good health. So I think she probably just assumed she'd be out walking her daily miles till the day she died. Right.
My mother ate well. She exercised. She was swimming competitively into her 60s. And when she turned 80, she got old. None of us anticipated that. I figured she'd outlive me. I mean, she just was so healthy.
But you don't really realize what it means to take care of somebody with dementia and physical limitations.
And there may just come a time where you find your line. And I should have told her, at this point, we're going to have to reevaluate the situation. And what did happen with my mother is that she fell. She broke her pelvic bone in 4 places and she had to be taken to the hospital. And from there, rehab, and from there, a nursing home. And when she was in the hospital, the emergency room doctor came and talked to me, and she was still COVID. I think it was right before the Delta variant started to come around. And so they finally were out of all their garb. You know, they just had the mask on. She got right up in my face and she pulled that mask down and she said, I want you to realize that your mother can never come home with you. She said, she'll never be safe in your home again now that she's fallen like this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I was so grateful for that, because I just thought, how am I going to deal with this? How am I going to make this work? And so I was grateful for her. I felt like she got some sort of a prompting from above to come and be.
Just
so
kidding.
and take away that, I mean, you still felt guilt, but to take away the choice so that you didn't even have to weigh it.
Yeah. And, you know, this is a good time to bring siblings into it too. It's important to have these conversations with the siblings. Where are their lines and what are they going to do?
And what do they contribute, whether monetarily, time-wise? Because, you know, if you guys all lived closer, if some circumstances were different, situations were different, maybe you guys could have come up with a different plan. But yeah.
But I did appreciate my brother Steve was like, Cindy, I trust you. Whatever you decide for mom is in her best interest. And I care about you and your well-being. And I really appreciated that. So if you're the sibling that's not the caretaker, absolutely contribute what you can do. But in the end, the full-time caretaker has to more things to consider than just, you know, where mom goes. You know, we've got our own mental health, physical health.
Own family circumstances.
The safety for the parent. Mm-hmm. And I think with the dementia, her legs just forgot to work.
Well, and with the dementia, I think she sometimes would forget that she would fall. You found this in the nursing home. She would still try to get out of bed because she would forget that she could not walk.
Right. Right. Yeah. They'd find her on the floor because she would just swing her legs around and stand and she couldn't do it. So she was very angry with me. She was angry that I wouldn't come get her out of the hospital. She was angry when she was in the nursing home. And really, quite frankly, she was angry until the day she died. And I don't know that that can be changed in any way. I've had friends who have assured me that they had the closest of relationships with their mothers. And the minute they got them in a nursing home, they got angry. I think that is something that happened. So I've told all my children, I give you permission now when we hit the line to put me in the nursing home. And I can guarantee you I'm going to be angry at you.
Right.
But please remember that I'm not angry now. In my right mind.
At your best peak self.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think too, when you, if parents will have these conversations beforehand, it'll be easier to recognize that when your parents are going through their aging process, that it's not personal and it's going to hurt so much when they get angry at you and get mad.
Yeah.
But there are things happening to them that they can't control and that they probably feel out of control themselves. And so, yeah, when they're angry at you and you just think, oh my goodness, they're never going to talk to me again.
Right.
This is just them coping the best way that they can. So I think it allows a lot of room for like love and understanding on the child's point of view. This is actually what she wanted at her best self.
And it's going to be okay.
I think there needs to be room for a fair amount of flexibility in your plans and in your expectations. This is what I expect. This is what I'd be willing to do as of right now. Here are some things that might change that in the future. If you want us to not go into a nursing home, I will do my best to make sure that that then is a last resort. Well, and it goes back to the whole, you know, child-parent dynamic shift, right? Our teenagers get mad at us and our preteens and our toddlers, like when we have to put them into situations they didn't want to be in because it's better for them, it's safer for them, right? When we
make
some choices because that's what's best for them. And so just like we stand our ground with our kids, you have to stand your ground with your aging parents sometimes in the most loving and kind way possible.
Everybody wants to be in their home till they die. We all want that.
Yeah.
But if I would have just said to her, yeah, mom, you can come live with me. There may be some lines where, you know, we need to discuss that there may be a chance that you go to a nursing home. I would have held on to those conversations when she was mad at me.
Yeah.
And, you know, refusing to speak to me and all of that, I would have just thought, okay, but when she was in her right mind, that's the conversation I'm going to trust.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm just going to love her through this. You know, she's not herself. And it's interesting what people will say when you tell them that you put your mother in a rest home. One of the comments I got was as if what I was doing wasn't
enough. Yeah.
And what my counselor helped me come to, and I think it is an absolute truth. Whether your parents are in your home, in their own home, in a rest home or an assisted living facility, or in another sibling's home, you are caring for your parents.
Right.
If you make a decision that's not popular with other people, you are still their caretaker. And in the parents' best interest, this is what you're doing. And this is how you're taking care of your parents.
Mm-hmm. My mother passed away in November. Stephanie came out and helped me get her affairs in order. I was taken by the responsibility of closing her life out here on this earth and doing it in a way that would please her And we found out that there were a lot of surprises. I thought I had done my due diligence. I thought I was on it really, truly. And to find that I was not was a surprise. And so let's go talk about that. And the first thing is the dispersal of stuff.
Even after three downsizings.
Yeah.
There was still a lot of stuff.
So much stuff. And, you know, what do you do with all that? You know, I wish she had written what to do.
Well, so my sister-in-law's family does this really genius idea, or has this really genius idea, with their grandmother takes masking tape and puts it on the back of different items that she wants to give different family members. So that when she dies, the family just has to like take the object, flip it around and look at the masking tape to see like who it's supposed to go to. And I guess the story is when she gets mad at people, she'll take the masking tape off of your item and put someone else's on it, or, you know.
Well, if my name wasn't the last name on it, I would demand that we pull it back until you get to the right name. Just something, some way to designate this is for you. It would also make being able to throw things out and donate things a lot easier if things that meant something to my mother had been labeled.
Right.
Because then if things hadn't been labeled, I would know, okay, we're good. And my mother, thank heaven, she had put together an heirloom scrapbook, and she had taken a picture of all her heirlooms and explained mm-hmm. who they were from and all of that. And so I was taking objects and looking through the heirloom book so that I did not donate heirlooms to Goodwill.
And I feel like even without a lot of direction about where she wanted things, you spent a lot of time pondering what you could do with the things to make them matter, right? Like, so donating thousands of pieces of music to the local university that has a large music department, but it would have just been so much easier and would have felt so much more secure that we were doing with her things what she would have wanted if she had taken some time while living to communicate some of those ideas.
Yes. And the other thing I kind of came away with that is that I don't want this to be a job for my children. I don't want my kids to have to go, what did mom want with this? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, is there a moral obligation to keep everything your mother ever touched? You know, it's hard.
Yeah.
You feel disloyal.
And the thing is that when you are going through someone's things after they have died, now that process is supercharged with your own emotion.
Right.
Because all of a sudden now everything has so much weight, everything has so much sentiment, and everything is just so much more meaningful. And so that was a hard task of where does all this go? Yeah.
I think of all my writing notebooks, you know, everything I've written, my book, other book I'm working on now, I have these notebooks just tossed, you know, I mean, I keep them because they mean something to me in that writing process.
But what's funny is you're saying just toss them, but my heart breaks and I thought, I'm not tossing your notebooks. I'm writing notebooks. I'm going to keep them. Like, so you're not the boss of me. I'm going to hold on to at least one or two of your notebooks.
Well, you are very welcome to, but there is no burden. You'll be like, wow, mom. Cause I kind of write in circles. Like my notes are all across the page, and as organized as I like to think that I am, I really take sloppy notes. But anyway, the next thing is that I had to arrange for her burial.
I like that phrase that you said, you're closing out their life. You're putting a period at the end of their time here. But you and I had a conversation about what you would like, and you said you didn't want to be cremated. And I said, well, actually.
To find humor in these kinds of places is just stress relieving. And we were in the funeral home talking about all of this. And you bent over and you said, what do you feel about cremation? And I said, I don't want to be cremated.
And I said, well, that is 100% what's going to happen to you. But I'm telling you now and with humor so that you're not mad at me whenever my day comes and we're together again, that you are like, well, you did tell me you were going to cremate me. You tell me what your favorite hymn is and I'll make sure that's played. Assuming, I can guarantee you that you'll have your favorite music. That's easy.
And I'll send you my list.
Okay, Andrew County. Yeah. Well, you have asked for two things. You've asked to be buried, not cremated. And we both know that's not going to happen. And then you have asked to be buried with your wedding ring. But I hate to tell you, mom, that we will That'll be off your finger faster than you can say, hey, don't take it.
I just tell you to bury me with it because I just laugh because I know you guys want it.
But that kind of brings us to the more practical note, conversations you do need to have with your parent before they die. What do you want your funeral to look like? And information like, what county were you born in? What year were you born in? Like, just things that you're going to have to know.
And I thought I knew those things. Like when you take care of an elderly parent, you give out their birthday so many times for prescriptions mm-hmm. and doctors and forms. But in the funeral home, he asked me, where was your mom born? Huh. I know she's told me. She lived in Death Valley. Like I know she lived in the desert. And it was always hot.
Yeah. Yeah. And even your mother was so musically talented and so music was her life than to try to choose favorite songs.
Yeah.
And narrow down out of all her many favorite songs, which ones you play at the funeral, which ones meant something to her.
Yeah. What do you want to
be
hear
her final send off, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you feel that so keenly just because you want to do it right. And you want to do it in a way that pleases them. And I still got a kick too, because that week he kept asking, hey mom, what's your favorite song?
Just by the by.
Wondering. Yeah.
Your favorite hymn.
Yeah. And what year were you born? Just, thought I better just check up on that. Other thing to know is your mother's social security number. Which we won't discuss mine on air, but I'll make sure you know it. And you'll want a copy of her driver's license and you will need a copy of her birth certificate.
Okay. So it's on the parent's responsibility to make sure their birth certificate, social security number, and driver's license.
Get a folder together.
Yeah.
Knowing me and my sense of humor, I would buy a black folder and label it death, and put all the, I know. But put that together for your kid. Encourage your parents to put that together for you. And one last thing that I would say that we would need is, for the love of all that is good and holy, please write down your passwords. My mother, as her memory would go, she would forget her passwords. So she kept changing them. And then she would write them down in a notebook.
Yeah.
But we didn't know what they went to. So anytime I needed to get into her accounts for anything, and you will, I just have to go through and try all of her passwords and see what would work. So
I remember going through all those notes
and
seeing a new random combination and be like, oh, here's a new one.
Here's a new one. Try this one. Yeah. So passwords, people, write down your passwords and the sites that they're for someplace that would really be helpful. And keep it updated, because it's not going to do any good if it's not updated. So in closing, the takeaway from this, I think in every category that we've discussed, is communication, right?
Right. Communication and a fair set of expectations.
And kids, be honest with your parents. I know Stevie and I have kind of laughed about the two requests I have. She has no intention of keeping them. But I think it's important, if there are some expectations that the kids are like, I don't think I can do that.
Yeah.
Speak up, especially, in all those situations, making boundaries, having them come live with you. It becomes time to move them into a home or into assisted living of any kind. Mm. And siblings, communicate. What are all the siblings' lines? What are they feel that they can do in the help of the care of their parents? It's not a fun conversation to have, because we never like to think about our parents dying.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, absolutely. So after you have those conversations, then go have fun and celebrate life in some way, right?
Thank you so much for talking with me today. And thank everyone for listening. I hope you have some takeaways from the things that we've discussed. I'd like to remind all of the women that listen to my podcast that they are doing better than they think. And this stage of life, when you become the parent to your parents, the same thing is true. It can be a very tumultuous and stressful time in your life. Try to prepare the best you can and keep yourself healthy. Remember, you are doing better than you think.
What county?
YOLO County.
YOLO? You only live once, county?
Yeah.
It's not a real place. I don't believe you. I don't believe that's the county you were born in. You're making that up. That is not a real place.
No, you can look it up on a map. It even still exists. YOLO, YOLO.
That's not even true. I can't put YOLO County. They're going to think I'm lying. It's not real.
It is real.
I'm not putting that down. Hopefully the Undertaker will not think I'm making a poorly timed joke about your life passing. Like, where was your mom born? YOLO.